B-Pod Studios.
Felger.
I don't know, guys. Am I going to play? Am I not going to play? What am I going to do?
Mass.
Yeah, Mass, you stupid. S-T-O-O. Stupid Mass.
It's time for Felger and Mass, presented by DraftKings on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Some in the media are calling this divorce from Belichick and the Patriots. Is that fair or is that a total misrepresentation?
I think it's just change. I don't know that it's a divorce or change. I just think, you know, 20 years together is a long time.
Yes, it is.
Like being married 50 years.
And so, you know, I mean, I can't tell you the hundreds of times that Tommy has said Bill is the best coach in football. I mean, he's just Tommy sings Bill's praises. So the war sounds a little bit harsh. I think it's a separation. You know, Bill's got a lot of responsibilities to keep the Patriots on track, and that is a bigger responsibility than keeping Tommy under the hood. So, you know, both of them are mature individuals, and I really respect Bill's decision and respect Tommy's decision as well. It's okay to take different paths. You don't have to stay joined at the hip.
That's Tom Brady Sr. on the Del Curry podcast. That's right. Everyone and their father has a podcast. Steph Curry's father has a podcast. And he got Tom Brady's father. There's some symmetry there. It's Felger and Mazz on an agenda-free Friday. Agenda-free Fridays are driven by the Bernardi Auto Group, where car buying is always agenda-free. Choose the new Acuras, Audis, Hondas, Toyotas, Volvos, and over 500 pre-owned vehicles. Bernardi for now, Bernardi for life, BernardiAutoGroup.com. Felger and Mazz is always presented by DraftKings, coming to you from our Town Fair Tire Studios. Murray, myself, Mazz is on location. And joining us in our Town Fair Tire Studios is Chris Gasper. Chris is powered by the commuter rail as part of service level changes across its system to slow the spread of COVID-19. The MBTA has added additional commuter rail trains into Boston for the 7 a.m. work shift to accommodate essential employees and medical professionals. Visit MBTA.com/coronavirus for schedules and more information. Hi, Chris. How are you?
I'm okay. How are you guys?
We are hanging in.
It's a little warm in here. I think you could incubate quite a few germs
really?
In here.
Really? Yeah. Because you know why?
Why?
Mazz is home. Mazz is usually turned it down because Mazz runs so hot that he cranks the AC down in this thing. It's an igloo, so now we're like in normal conditions.
Mazz, fix it.
How do you spell igloo?
Mazz, fix it with your app from home and make it cold for Gasper.
Oh, don't you worry. I will, Murray.
So the Tom Brady divorce, Gasper, we're now more than a week later. Who do you blame for it? Who do you blame for the divorce?
I blame Bill.
Shocker.
I blame Bill. No, I mean, I think this was not something that just happened over the course of one offseason. It was frustration and deterioration and ultimately exasperation with Bill over the course of 3 or 4 years. You know, you can go back to dropping Deflategate in his lap, taking away Guerrero's privileges. I mean, again, I bring this up every time, but I'll never forget the image of Brady getting that rub down from Alex Guerrero next to the Sterno cans and the chafing dishes in his suite. I mean, that's a terrible look. That should never happen. And you can argue whether they put it out there on purpose or not or whatever the deal was, but he took away the guy's privileges. And then there were so many times that Tom just tried to get a commitment, you know, from him, and it wouldn't happen. Where do you think the term uncharted territory came from? You think Tom came up with that?
So
what do you mean by that?
Yeah,
well, I'm saying
it?
The idea of a 41 or 42-year-old quarterback and him being at a stage of his career where you're a starter and you're not, you know, and it's sort of going year to year and everything with last year in terms of it being we're in uncharted territory, which was the buzz phrase internally and externally there. Do you think that's something Brady? Do you think Brady thinks he's in uncharted territory?
No.
Uncharted in the sense of like a complete unknown. No one knows whether he can keep playing.
Right.
You know, do you think Brady feels that way?
Right. No, of course not. No.
So then who feels that way?
Bill.
Yeah, exactly. And so there was just a lack of willingness to make a commitment there. And I also think he miscalculated. And this I don't blame him for as much based on Tom's history with the team, but I just thought he thought Tom didn't have any better options, and when push came to shove, he'd come crawling back. And if he didn't, I think Bill was actually okay with that. So
yeah,
that's why I blame Bill.
I mean, he's responsible for sure. Most responsible. And I definitely think that they thought he was going to cave. And they nailed the market, right?
They did.
At the end of the day, Brady was left with a better deal at a bad place.
Yep.
And they thought if given the option of staying here or going to a bad place, even with a better offer, he'd choose here. And they almost nailed the whole thing.
Do you know why I blame Bill, too? And this isn't piling on, but it's just there's an interpersonal aspect to this because, you know, I reported this. Jeff Howes reported this. They made an offer to Brady last July, August, that was 2 years. It started out, you know, at about $50 million. At the end of it, it was 2 for $53 million. And my understanding of it is, you know, again, it's the Patriots, so there are some of those per-game roster bonuses in there.
Sure.
So say 1 year, there's, you know, a $1 million. If you play all 16 games, you get $1 million, an extra $1 million. Another year, you get two. Whatever that was. The money in the first year was fully guaranteed. The money in year two, my understanding is, was basically like 75% guaranteed.
Wow.
And at that point, you know, Brady didn't take it. And you know why? Because at that point, he looks at it and says, okay, there's a 25% chance Bill can get out of this. That means there's a 100% chance he's going to screw me. And that I put on Bill. The fact that the relationship, the trust level got to the point where Brady looked at that thing and said, this isn't, I still think he's going to try and screw me in the end.
There's wiggle room and he'll try to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's really the issue.
Huh. I mean, to me, so that's exactly what it is. Like I've said over and over, Chris, that I think he didn't trust Bill. He didn't.
Exactly. He just didn't trust him and he was done with him.
Yeah, now look, and again, I don't know that any of that has anything to do or can be attributed entirely, is a better way to say it, to how Bill treated Brady. I think it has more to do with over the years with, well, he shipped Richard Seymour to Oakland. He said Mankins to Tampa. He jettisons these guys all over the place. The first chance he's getting, he's going to do the same to me. Like, I don't know that Brady was ever going to feel that he ever had Belichick's trust.
Chris, how do you respond to some of the criticism this week? Joe Montana blasted it.
Yeah.
Said, I don't understand why the Patriots let him go. Bradshaw was really more critical of Brady. Don't know what the hell Tom's doing.
Yeah.
Leaving there was an ego decision. You know, how do you feel about the blowback to that decision? Does it tell you, I mean, are they both to blame in some respects? Because, I mean, you believe, too, that they didn't, that they're both worse off.
I do. I do think they're both worse off. Yeah, I would say that. I think that ego and pride and dignity and all those things got in the way. And I do think there was sort of a dare factor there on Brady. It's like, from Bill, where it's like, well, you won't do this. And I feel like he did it just to sort of, you know, he did it to spite Bill, even if he ended up spiting himself at the end with this decision. That's why I thought he was coming back all along. And, you know, the tone had softened a little bit at the end of the season. There was a window there. I don't know what happened on that call with Bill, but obviously it didn't go well. And then that was it. But I kept saying I thought that eventually cooler heads would prevail, because I still look at it and say, how is either side better off? Like, I don't think either side had a better option if the goal was to keep winning championships.
Okay, so Chris on the Brady watch as always, because he's got good insight into the Brady side of things. They're both of them, really. So that's on the table. Chris, just want your thoughts quickly on these leagues trying to get back and the options on the table. Empty buildings, neutral sites, etc. Yeah. Any thoughts on what's developed here in the last couple
of
days?
I'm okay with playing games without fans. You know, if that means that the games come back, I'm okay with that. I think that it's probably the responsible thing to do. I don't know if you guys saw, there was this story today, I think it might have been in the Washington Post, about a Champions League game that they feel like was like ground zero for the spread.
Yeah, in Italy, right?
In Italy.
Yeah.
So that's a real problem. I like some of the NBA stuff. They can test some of the things they want to do, like the tournament. The one thing I read, I know Maz put it in the email exchange, the one thing I didn't like there was their playoff format. They're going to play, the first round will be best of five, and then they're going to go to like a knockout thing.
Right.
That makes sense.
Yeah, I don't really like that. I mean, I could see it maybe for one round, but I think when you get to the conference finals, that should be more than one game, whether it's best of three or you got to do something. But it's a chance to experiment, and I think that's good for some of these leagues. Try and make the best of a very, very bad situation.
How about baseball? I can't figure out whether they're saying we're not going to play in front of empty buildings or not.
I can't figure them out either.
Right? I mean, they're saying if it's deemed that, you know, the way it's worded is just a little confusing. They're not saying we're not going to play in empty buildings, but we won't come back unless we can have fans in the stadium. So, like, I again, it's not clearly defined, but if Do you think there's a possibility baseball saying we're not going to play unless there's fans there? And if that was the case, how would you feel about that?
I wouldn't feel great about it. I mean, they might be saying we feel like we can go to certain places where the spread is not as bad and we don't feel like the risk is as high and the stadiums aren't as big, like, say, spring training sites in Arizona. Maybe they feel they can get away with that, but I feel like that's a little risky. Who knows? I mean, no one has a crystal ball here. We have to see what ends up happening, what the data is. I mean, the biggest issue, just to take it outside, the biggest issue in all of this is there's still just not enough testing. We don't know who's walking around with it and who's not. If they could stop everybody at the turnstile and you know, do a test, or, you know, I have, like, the temporal thermometer, if there was something, you know, like Star Trek style, where you just scan the person,
zap them.
Then you just turn them away. But we don't know who has it and who doesn't. So to have these large gatherings, it's really, I just don't think it's worth it. Like, why are you doing it? For the money? Like, what is the benefit of having the fans there?
So, Mike, I tried to poke around a little bit on some of this baseball stuff to get a little bit of a clarification. I've gotten some, I think. I don't know if this is going to give you the answer you want, but I'll try.
Go ahead.
For example, let's say they get cleared in 26 cities, but they're not cleared in New York.
Right.
In other words, because New York has obviously,
yep,
the number of cases in New York is astronomical. And so baseball then has a problem with the Yankees and the Mets. What do we do with those two teams? Where do they play? And so in that scenario, those, you know, they're not going to come back if the Yankees and the Mets can't play. So they would then have to find. But the commissioner, from what I understand, is not against the idea of playing in empty stadiums or at neutral sites, as long as it makes sense for the overall game, economically and otherwise, to do it that way. But, you know, they could run into a problem where, you know, they're not able to play in New York for a really long time.
Understood. So that's fine. I'm into that. Be flexible and keep every option on the table and don't rule things out and don't be unsafe and don't go against the advice of the researchers and the doctors and the CDC. Take their cues, but leave everything on the table. And if it means you can play in most of the cities but not all, then figure that out. Figure that out when you get there. All right, so all that's on the table with Chris Gaspar. We'll take calls from you right after this.
Felger and Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub and streaming anywhere you go,
go
on the Sports Hub app.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
Colin Cowherd of Fox and Fox Sports.
Felger and Mazz.
Best afternoon show in America.
Mike Felger.
Felger's a smart aleck.
Tony Maserati.
You know your baseball.
Felger and Mazz.
You guys do a great show.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, phones, as promised with Gasper. I think there's one open line there. It's 617-779-0985. Chris in Boston. Go ahead, Chris. Christopher.
Hey, yummy.
Yep, go ahead.
Hey, sorry. Yeah, staring out of gate D right now. What a day for baseball. It'd be awesome if we could do it. This really sucks. My question is on schedule format changes to baseball, both shortening the season and trimming the innings. You guys have been beating the drum, and I'm with you regarding fewer games. I think baseball is a great opportunity to improve the game right now, make some radical changes, and if they fail, they still have the quick out to say, we had no choice because it's COVID-19. So that said, 9 innings and 120-plus games is a great equalizer across baseball's lifetime. Last time we dipped below 150 scheduled games was 10 years before the Spanish-American War. And it's allowed us to speak the names of non-contemporaries in the same breath when speaking about individual feats. I also recognize the steroid era kind of unraveled our ability to feel comfortable comparing accomplishments. I think there are a couple stats that
Chris,
survive.
Yeah. Give me the point, please, quickly.
So averages, OBP, ERA, that survives. But like a 40-40 season and a lot of the stats the nerds love, they get harder to compare.
Yep.
Or do side-by-side analysis. So yeah, if we permanently change the season, do we give up anything in baseball being like the purest, most well-preserved sport?
Okay, Matt.
No.
Go ahead.
No, who cares? That's gone. It's gone. And look, I don't mean to be like, you know, jump down his throat or be insensitive about it. That all got blown out of the water. Barry Bonds hit 73 home runs. It was a joke. You destroyed it. He walked over 200 times. Nobody would pitch to him. The game was bastardized during those years. Forget it. It's gone. And just he said, not fewer than 150 games since before the Spanish-American War. Wrong. It was, in 1995, they played 144. So, you know, to me, I don't care about the records. This is the problem.
Who cares? Right.
Who gives a rat's ass about the records? You're going to have to start new records. That's what you're going to have to do.
Chris, how do you feel about seven-inning doubleheaders?
Here's what I would like to see them do. How about play one game that's nine and then have the second game be seven? I'd like to see that.
Why?
I just think it'd be interesting. And I think, look, seven-inning games, playing 2 7-inning games, I don't know, just kind of reeks to me of like high school baseball, you know?
So what's wrong with high school baseball? It's probably more interesting than Major League Baseball.
I don't know. Just limit it as much as you have to. You're going to play all these doubleheaders, and maybe it's something you can do moving forward. And if the seven-inning game turns out to be preferable to everybody, then fine, you go to it. Do 2 7-inning games. But I wouldn't just jump to something I don't have to do. So why don't you play the first game like a real game, and the second game is a 7-inning game because you're trying to squeeze in more games and you're trying to limit the wear and tear on the players. So I would do it that way.
Here's Steve in Boston. He joins us next. Hi, Steve.
You know fun, Chris.
Hey, guys. Looking at this completely from a marketing standpoint, as far as the teams are concerned, it's very difficult, number one, to turn on a dime and turn the league into, without an audience, turn it into a TV scheduling and a marketing. It's all in one, because what would happen with the teams if you tried to do that on the fly? They'd lose all indoor, outdoor sponsorships. They'd lose the gate, concessions, parking.
Steve, they've lost it anyway.
Yep.
So I mean, if there's no games, they've lost it anyway. The choice is this TV show or nothing. So I'm not telling you that it's ideal or that you wouldn't want in real stadiums with fans in the seats. Of course you do. The question is, if that's not allowed and if it's not feasible, then do you want them to salvage something? If you tell me no, that you just, you know, you think that the product's going to suffer so badly in an empty building, fine. But the sign revenue and the seat revenue and the concession revenue, that's gone. That's already gone.
Now, what about I mean, you still see the signs on TV.
Well, that's a fair point,
people
too.
People still going to see the sign.
This is right. This is all the signage on the rink in basketball or hockey. Yeah, that's all there anyway.
And they can digitally project this stuff behind home plate. They change it. That's what they do anyway. If you're in the stadium, it's just like this blank canvas.
Exactly. So that's actually a good point. Dave and Lynn on the Patriots draft. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, Mel Kiper had the Patriots taking Jordan Love of Utah, quarterback with the first pick. I was wondering what you guys thought of that.
Okay, Gasper, Patriots draft, 23 overall. They take a quarterback. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. I mean, I just don't think that beyond Joe Burrow, Tua, Justin Herbert, you know, now you're talking about that next group. And some people have Jordan Love in that group with those guys. I don't. I'm not a scout, though. I'm not sure if he fits what they want to do. I think he's kind of like a Josh Allen type. He has incredible physical skills, but the accuracy is a little inconsistent in the decision-making. Now, people have been able to explain that away by saying he lost, I think, his 3 top receivers at Utah State, and they had a coaching change. He was better his junior year than his senior year, so maybe there's something to that. But he does fit the mold of these new-age quarterbacks. I mean, he can run around. He has a howitzer for an arm. He would be a different type of Patriots quarterback.
I'd hate it, because it would mean they have no plan and that Jarrett Stidham's not the guy and they don't know who the hell quarterback is supposed to be next year. That's what. If they use 23 overall on a quarterback, they've effed this up royally.
What if they trade up for this guy or some other guy, and it's like their target?
Sure, fine. I mean, look, I mean, other teams did that. They did. The Chiefs obviously did it with Patrick Mahomes some years ago, and worked out for them. And
but that would mean
with Deshaun Watson.
That would mean, I mean, maybe it would mean they have a plan. You know, we let one of the reasons we let Brady go is because we really like this guy, and he's in our range, and we're going to go get him.
That feels like more of a plan. If they were to trade up for one of these guys, and even if that's Tua, who I like, obviously an injury risk, but if they did that, that's understandable. But if they get to 23 and it's Jordan Love or, I don't know, the kid from Georgia, who I actually kind of like,
Jake Fromm,
I don't know. It just feels to me like you don't know what your plan is at quarterback, and you're going to have those. If you're going to take one, have it be the fourth or fifth round, because right now I'm under the impression, now that you've brought Brian Hoyer in, that Stidham is the guy, Hoyer's going to be the backup. You might draft someone as well to maybe compete to be the backup and even push Stidham going further. But if you draft in the first round, you have no plan.
We've got Mike in the car on Tom Brady. Go ahead, Michael.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I have a quick question that I'll hang up and let you guys discuss. With Tom Brady going down to Tampa, what's the deal with Guerrero? Is he going down with them? Are they splitting up? Thanks.
Okay, Chris, do you know anything there? He's got to be joined at the hip, right?
Yeah, I believe he'd be going down there with him. I haven't heard anything otherwise. I mean, they're business partners. Brady, you know, Guerrero's the godson of one of his kids. I wouldn't see why they'd split up for any reason.
How about the whole family in Tampa? Does that surprise you?
That does surprise me a little bit. I don't know. I'll believe that one when I see it. I think there could be more of an like, I'm not saying the family won't be spending time there, but for that to be the base, I want to see it.
Okay, I still think he should be there. I think he should be there for his sake, for nothing else. I mean, you want to go shove it up Bill's butt? You want to go prove everybody wrong? You want to prove all these teams wrong that passed on you? You know, then you give a full effort and a full accounting. You're there all the time. You're not going. You're not flying back and forth. You're at the building on Monday night. You're not. You know. You're not doing that half schedule. So for his sake, I hope he's there. Kevin in Newton, go ahead, Kevin. What do you got?
Hey, just two options for hockey up in Canada potentially. In the greater Toronto area, hockey rinks are like Dunkin' Donuts.
Right.
So there's the infrastructure's there, and the other idea is, They have facilities with like 6-8 rinks in them, so they could turn that thing into a bubble so easily. And if they wanted to go nationally, you've got all the major junior cities that are small cities, a couple thousand seats. It's definitely an option. And then they have the infrastructure all across the country, just like Maz's point about the World Cup.
Did they have to? I mean, is there stuff left over in Calgary from those Olympics? You know, or Vancouver, right? I mean, I'm dating myself, but they've both been Olympic cities. So they must have multiple rinks and some sort of semblance left over of a village or housing or something. And if you're going to do that, bubble city and just put the teams all in one place, there's got to be there's got to be several spots up in Canada, Miles.
I mean, I think Canada, in a lot of ways, if we're talking about hockey, is ideal. Because not only do you have all these rinks, you also have, you know, social distancing built in. Like, how many people are in Canada? It's like 75 million or all that space or something. I might be high. It might be less than that. I just think that it's an obvious, easy place to do it.
They also probably know how to make ice in the summer. You know, I know because every time we bring this up, you know, the Stanley Cup going into August, September, we get all these calls about, well, what about the ice? What about the ice? Yeah, the ice blows at the Garden. Yes, the ice blows at the Garden. So let's go to Canada, or even probably in the middle of August, they nail the ice and they get it perfect. So there, you don't have to worry about the ice.
Yeah, you can't play here in August, Felga.
So we continue. Chris Casper is in our Town Fair Tire Studios. Baseball has come up with some loose parameters about their return. Don't love the sound of all of it. We'll get to that and your calls right after you hear about those details in the update with Big Jim Murray.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
Something?
I don't know. Google it, Maz.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app.
That's idiotic.
Now back to Felger and Maz on Boston's home for sports.
What do you know of the plan to finding one now in Foxborough?
Green, and that may be the plan going into training camp where there is no obvious starter, where you have Jarrett Stidham on a rookie contract. You've got Brian Hoyer on a salary where basically he's making $2 million, of which the Colts are paying half. And you draft another young quarterback, and then you've got three quarterbacks, all capable, all waiting to see what we could do, all at that same point in time on inexpensive contracts, and you take that money and you rebuild the rest of the roster, and you put money elsewhere, and you sign young players to extensions, and you have a lot of extra money to spend because you haven't spent it at the quarterback position, because frankly right now, there's nobody that the Patriots have identified that money's worth spending on. So, again, you're going to have Stidham competing for the job. Brian Hoyer is going to be capable of competing for the job. I think they draft another quarterback. And if there's some veteran quarterback still on the street in a couple of weeks, no home, price dropped, maybe the Patriots bring him into the mix as well. But I think that right now they feel pretty comfortable with the quarterback situation with Brian Hoyer back in the fold, and they'll let these men compete this summer. There's not a lot of money invested in the position. It gives them flexibility and options, and let the best men win that job.
Chris Gasper, Jared Stidham is the quarterback all 16 games. What's the Patriots' record?
I'm sorry. Nobody turns you-know-what into Shinola like Schefter. So let me just translate all that BS he just regurgitated that he got from Belichick. They don't have a plan. There was no plan. This idea of, oh, Tom better decide quickly because Bill's going to have a plan and move on was garbage. There was no plan. And now they're trying to pass having no plan off. I mean, did you listen to all the stuff he said? It's like, well, you know, Hoyer could be the starter, or it could be Stidham. I also think they'll draft a guy, but if there's a veteran guy available, they'll do that too. That is no plan. Zero. No plan.
Do you think they have no plan?
I think relative to what Bill Belichick normally does, he's freelancing this. So the answer is yes. There is no definitive Bill Belichick master plan. Now, it all might work out in the end, and that's Bill's genius. He can take plan F and make it look like plan A. And he can execute his plan F better than anybody else's plan A. But that doesn't mean that it was plan A and it was all part of the master design. This plan, to me, is a lot like what they've done at receiver the last 2 years. They're going to throw a lot of crap against the wall and hope something sticks. That's the plan.
That's sobering. I mean, believe it or not, Chris, considering how negative I usually am, I've actually tried to look at this as glass half full. When they signed Hoyer, it just means Stidham is the guy. He's the backup. He'll push him a little bit, but Stidham is going to be the guy going forward. But you don't believe that for
no,
a second.
No, I mean, I have to be honest, and I have the utmost respect. I mean, Schefter is incredible. He's a pillar of pro football journalism. But I got a little ill listening to that because it's like he's selling it like it's this great thing, and it's everything. It's no plan. It's like, well, they could draft a guy. Or, you know, Stidham could be the guy in the second year. You know, Hoyer's a veteran guy who started some games. And, you know, if there's a veteran guy that becomes available, how is that? I mean, that's just everything else. It's like,
is that reflective?
It's like, you know, Brady could decide he doesn't like Tampa and ask for a trade back to the Patriots. Why didn't he throw that in there, too?
Okay, but is it reflective of the fact that Bill happens to think he could win with a bunch of guys? And he might be wrong about this, but that's sort of his attitude.
Maybe it is. I mean, I would say, you know, it might be more reflective, actually, of Josh thinks he can win with a bunch of guys.
Oh, really? How do you think Josh and Brady were at the end, now that you brought that up?
I honestly, I don't know. That's a Tom Curran.
Jimmy Stewart question.
That's a Tom Curran, Jimmy Stewart question. I don't know how they were at the end. I mean, I think they're still friends. I think they'll be friends for life.
Stu?
They don't like each other. They don't love each other.
Well, I'll tell you, though.
They're not sending holiday cards to each other.
See, that's Jimmy. I didn't say that.
Hearing Gasper say, though, that Josh McDaniels thinks he could win with another quarterback, it, you know, to me is consistent with what we know about McDaniels. I think McDaniels would like a guy who can move around. He likes the idea of a quarterback that can run. And, Mike, to your point, if we were to use 2008 as a barometer for what McDaniels can do without Brady, and I'm not saying we should, but if you wanted to go that route, by the end of the year, Matt Castle at one point, I think, became like the only quarterback in league history to run for 300 yards and throw for 300 and run for 50 in like consecutive games or something like that. And I think McDaniels loves the mobility factor.
So to me, I like to think they believe in Stidham, but I think Bill's ego is at play here. And I think Bill has believed that he could have won with a number of quarterbacks. And I think Schefter is sort of reflecting that if it's Hoyer, we'll make it work. If it's Stidham, we'll make it work. Someone springs free that I like, we'll make it work with him too. And Bill might be fabulously wrong. He might be overplaying his hand. Like he overplayed, you know, I mean, look, I don't need Malcolm Butler to win this game. Wrong, you know. So it's not that he's always right, but I think he gets into this thing where I don't need that guy to win. And he's often right, probably usually right. He's just not always right. Cam Newton's one that's come up too, Gasper, sure. that I'm starting to talk myself into because it just feels like such a steal to be able to get him for nothing in return, like no draft pick compensation. And if he takes a one-year prove-it deal, like that's a lot of talent for nothing that I just think is almost too hard to pass up. You?
I just don't know if he would fit what they want. The question would be, would they adjust, you know, to him? Would they be willing to adjust sort of? I mean, he's obviously much better than Jacoby Brissett, but I'm just saying when Jacoby Brissett had to sub for those two games in 2016, they obviously adjusted what they did. They didn't ask Jacoby Brissett to go out there and play like Jimmy G or Tom Brady. So if they're willing to adjust to Newton, I think that's fine. But if they're going to ask him to run a precision passing game, I don't think he's the ideal fit.
I also think he would need to adjust because I don't think he can keep playing like that because he's taking too much of a beating.
Oh, you think his mobility's gone? If his mobility's gone, I don't want him.
I think he relies too much on it. He's taken too much of a beating. That left foot and that right shoulder are a real problem. He hasn't been the same guy in 5 years.
Yeah, if he can't run, then that's like 75% of his value.
I think the old Take Master General over here wants him for the content more than anything
else. Oh, it'd be great. It'd be great for content. No. This is purely a, and I hate to use the word, but it is a value equation. It's, yeah, you know, he's a number one pick, league MVP. He made a Super Bowl. He didn't acquit himself well once he got there, but that's a talented guy.
Yeah,
he,
you're right.
It is a talented, talented guy, and the talent like that doesn't come along for free very often.
And he's played well against the Patriots, which always seems to resonate with Bill. But here's my question, to go back to what Schefter said. So Cam Newton's going to come here on a one-year prove-it deal and be cool duking it out with Jarrett Stidham, Brian Hoyer, and whoever they draft for the starting job.
So that would be my problem, Ed, but he's not duking it out. You're not, because Cam Newton on the bench in a one-year prove-it deal is a disaster way to
happen.
Well,
that's what I'm saying. Well, hold on, but it's like, you know, this is their plan is fluid. So it's like whoever, you know, is the plan. So they just, and I believe he said in there, they want to just see what they got. It's very, it's like, it's cool, man. It's all good. It's like Bruce Arians, right? It's like beat Nick Bruce. It's cool, man. We'll find a quarterback. So it's like, you know, Cam comes in. I don't think there's any guarantees. At least it doesn't say. He has to fight for the job, right?
No, he'd have to be the starter. No. Because I just think that's just a big ask for a guy who, again, number one overall pick, national college champion, Super Bowl MVP.
But Bill doesn't care about any of that stuff.
No. But Cam does. And if Cam comes in and has to compete with Stidham or, you know, sit, he'll be a pain in the ass and I want nothing to do with him.
So maybe that's why the Patriots wouldn't investigate it.
Right. To me, that's the answer on Newton. You know, would he be able to fit that thing? But to me, I wouldn't want to put him behind Stidham. It would be, look, I think the Pats thought Brady was going to cave and they'd get Brady for one more year and Stidham would wait one more year and that's what was going to happen. So instead of Tom Brady being that guy, Cam Newton's that guy. And that's, you know, again, only if he's free, only if he's cheap. And I just think that's a lot of talent for a little return. Hard to pass up. Okay, calls, I promise, with Gasper right after this.
It's Felger and Mazz on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Felger and Mazz.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
I hate jokes. We're not taking jokes.
That joke blew.
It's Felger and Mass, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
I guess I would probably favor Buffalo a little bit. I probably would. But that doesn't mean to say, like, I'm feeling really confident and I'm going to go to the casino and drop 10 grand on it and go, Bills are winning the AFC East. I mean, you're right. I mean, we're all crazy if you think the Patriots are going to fall off earth. I don't give a shit who the quarterback is. Jarrett Stidham, yep, I know he hasn't played a lot. New England doesn't give a shit. New England,
and they
went,
like him.
Yeah, they,
like
they him love too. Him. New England went 11-5 with a quarterback that didn't play college football. All right? So, and I understand the team was really good at that time, and I understand that. But still, you know, this is still a defense that's special. The best secondary. Really, right. So I'm not going to sit here and say they're going to fall off earth. Plus, we know that some of these young receivers they had last year that underperformed, they're going to be better. You know, they signed a Damir Bird, who I think is a really good signing for them, a wide receiver from the Arizona Cardinals. So, I think New England will still be very much in the mix.
Chris Sims says they're still in the mix. You never gave me an answer, Gasper. If Stidham's a starting quarterback all 16 games next year, how many wins?
9-7, and they make the playoffs.
Wow. Boy, that's a lot of wins.
Well, it's an expanded playoff field. It's a 14-team field.
No, but that's the nine wins is nine wins. It's a tough schedule, too.
Yeah.
What if it's Hoyer?
7-9.
There we go. That's a little bit more accurate.
Okay.
I like Brian, though. He's a nice guy.
And I think they'd win games with them. And not a ton, but I think they'd win some games with them. So 9-7 and they make the playoffs.
Who cares if he's a nice guy?
Right.
Like, no offense, Chris. My father's a nice guy. I don't want him playing quarterback for the Patriots.
All right, some calls here before Gasper gets out of here. Larry in Stoughton. Go ahead, Larry.
Good afternoon, gentlemen. I'm just a little surprised. You guys, I love you. But I'm surprised you, Chris, and you guys haven't spoke on Brady being a diva. This stuff is strictly about what he wants. The Patriots have been built behind Bill Belichick. He has never had receivers. Anybody they bring in, they adapt. Tom Brady, all the games I watched, I mean, like, he was missing receivers wide open.
No, we did not talk over the man, Larry. Finish your point. Don't listen to him.
I'm sorry. I apologize.
No, I apologize to you.
I'm yelling at Chris. Yes, I apologize.
Comment line, Brady's a diva. Your thoughts, Chris?
I don't think that's true.
Got a little diva-ish there at the end. Diva,
you think so?
Diva-ish by his standards. Yep.
I don't know. I would say by the average NFL quarterback standing stature. Like, no standard. He's not.
No, by his.
I mean,
I said by his.
Okay,
standard.
So he spoiled you for 18, 19 years, and then he just had a little, reciprocity, and suddenly like, he's a diva. I don't know. I mean, look, I have a lot of respect for the way the Patriots run their organization and what Bill has done, but I think it's just hard sometimes for people to expect the players to live by all these tenets when the coach decides that what's in the best interest of the team is to bench Malcolm Butler and doesn't explain it. Or everybody else has to take less, but the coach that is the highest paid coach in the league and has been for over a decade. So it's the classic case of, do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah.
And then when players call BS on it and do something, suddenly they're divas. I just don't buy it. I'm sorry. That's just me.
I buy it. It's the NFL. It's a dictatorship. Coach is the boss. That's just the way it goes. That's the way it is. And that's the way it should be in that sport. I don't have a problem with that whatsoever. And I think by Brady's standards, he got a little diva-ish. Certainly by the standards of other quarterbacks in the league, no. He's still got his head screwed on straight. But there was a little bit of slippage by him there at the end. Zach in Worcester. Go ahead, Zach.
Yeah, hey, I just want to say I'm gutted by Brady leaving, but right, Belichick could have gave him two more years. These guys coach until they die anyway, right? So he could have gave him two more years at whatever he wanted. But my main point is what happens, Edelman will probably go to Tampa, which I don't like his Foxborough forever post, but right, because he's got one more year left. So it's all based on if he stays or not, right? So if he follows him, then he's a follower to Tampa. But what happens if he adopts the TB12 method and becomes QB1? How about that?
Okay, you lost me. What's Edelman's future here, Gasper?
I don't know. I think he wants to stay. I mean, he has a lot of respect, obviously, for Bill. That's a close relationship. He feels like that's the guy who gave him his shot. And
he should feel this way, then.
Yeah, I wouldn't expect him to say, get me out of here. Now, look, if the Patriots see an opportunity maybe to get something for an aging player. I think Edelman's going to be 34. Is that right?
Maz, would you take a third? If Tampa offered you a third round pick for Edelman, would you send him for a third?
Not for a third, no. I think there's too much value there. There's too much to gain for what he could mean to Jarrett Stidham's development. And again, they don't, we touched on this earlier in the week, Chris. Their leadership on offense right now is thin. It's lacking. And if Edelman is willing to buy in and be that bread and butter guy for Stidham, that could play a huge role in getting that kid ready.
A third rounder? That's a good return for him at this age and the beating he's taken.
He turns 34 in May.
And all the drops he's had, especially last year, and you take that third.
Did you mention the money? Look, I don't think you even get a third for him.
Me either.
But I'm with Maz. I'm not looking for them to tank next year. I want them in the playoffs. I want them contending. And I want them making the most out of next year. I have no interest in 3-13 or anything like that. So I think Edelman's an important guy for Stidham. I hope he, just like he did for Garoppolo when it really mattered on the field, that he, ditches the Brady thing and gets his head out of Brady's keister and plays football and gets himself open for the next quarterback. That's what I'm hoping. And he did do that for Garoppolo. He didn't give him the time of day off the field. But on the field, he actually played well for him. Dan in Wilmington on the Major League Baseball shortened season idea. Go ahead, Dan.
Hey, guys. I just wanted to say, couldn't this potentially be a silver lining for Major League Baseball, considering that the old executives in the front office just can't get their heads out of their asses and figure out that a shortened season would be better for Major League Baseball? If there's a shortened season and the ratings go up, Couldn't that actually get them to move a little bit on something in the schedule?
Okay, Dan, I think not, because their revenues are tied to 162 games and 81 home dates and 81 dates on Nesson. And even if the ratings are higher with 60 dates on Nesson, or, you know, let's say it's 140 games. If the ratings are higher, but there's 20-something less games, that's 20-something less games of ad revenue, 20-something less games of concession and ticket sales, and I don't think the numbers work. They're never going back. They're never going back. They're never giving back money. Okay, and the NBA is the only league, of course, that's considering it, you know, trimming games, but then they're adding this in-season tournament and adding this other stuff that's not going to decrease revenue. They will never decrease revenue. So if you think they're going to give back games, I'm sorry. It's only going in one direction. Maz, your thoughts before we let Chris Gasper go on that.
No, look, I told you, I think that, you know, there's very little chance of them decreasing games on a regular basis. The you know, I like the idea. I want to see overall is more urgency. And if you're telling me you can modify the schedule to split seasons or something of the like, I'm all for it.
Okay, Chris, thanks for coming in. We appreciate it. Do we have a Murray and Gasper extravaganza tomorrow?
Please? Yes, now at a new time, until further notice, I believe, from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. And then, you know, the boss man asked us to plug this, too. And then it's going to be followed by, how fast
can I
pull
up
this text?
No, hold on. I got it. Let me do it. Let me take care of it here. So what we got tomorrow is Murray and Gasper, Gasper and Murray, 10 a.m. to 1,
right,
followed by Bruins Leafs Game 7.
Take that, Reimer, you bum.
Okay, I think, yeah, we've hit on that game once or twice before. Bruins Leafs Game 7, 2013 at 1 p.m. Then Celtics Wizards Game 2 in 2017. That's the Isaiah Thomas 53-point game.
Correct.
Then we have Sunday at 1, Pats Ravens, the 2014 game. That was when they came back twice from 14-point deficits.
Great one.
Okay, that was a tremendous football game, followed by the Pats Jaguars AFC Championship game. Okay.
Good one, too.
98.5 The Sports Hub will be rebroadcasting classic games at various times on weekends for the foreseeable future. So that's the deal.
Ah, take that, Reimer, you bum.
Here's the deal. Here's the deal. This weekend, all kicked off by Gasper and Murray tomorrow at 10. Chris, thanks for coming in.
All right, good to see you guys.
All right. Hour to go. Nothing but your wonderful, concise, great phone calls on landlines coming to you right after Murray's 90-second update. No commercials here.
Yeah! Yeah, mother... Yeah! 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 Woo! There it is. Get in!
Who got it?
Bergeron.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.